My name is Deb Quintel. I'm the Director of Curriculum Development with CALI, and today I am speaking with Professors Joe Grohman and Ron Brown from Nova Southeastern School of Law. Welcome.
Good morning.
How are you, Deb?
I'm well. How are you, too?
We're doing fine.
Excellent. Our topic today is some of the material that you'll need to understand law school. What are some practice skills? What are some good ways to survive the first semester? Professor Grohman, do you want to start us out, please?
Certainly, I'd be happy to do that. I usually begin these discussions with a basic premise, and that is that most of us go to law school to learn what really good attorneys do. And when I say that, I mean particularly from the skill level. And so everything that I address today will be based on that particular premise, one of which is something that a lot of people just don't consider anymore because we take it for granted. But if we stop to think about things, successful attorneys are usually pretty busy people, and yet at the same time, they need to make time available for all of their clients' needs. Well, law students are the same way. They get to be a lot busier than they ever anticipated. There's probably nothing that occurs in undergraduate school that readily prepares them from the time concept as to what time they need to put in for law school. So that's why I usually start out with the time management discussion. And as some evidence as to why that is so important, one of the realities of life is that when it comes to malpractice insurance for attorneys, the malpractice insurance underwriters usually require that the attorneys have at least a double entry diary so that there's a backup system to make sure that things are not missed. And that the attorneys actually have to prove to the malpractice carriers that these diary systems are available in their offices. So that becomes a really important concern for us, both from the practice of law and also from the standpoint of going to law school. One of the things you typically hear from students is, we work so much, we work so hard, we spend so much time on law school, and my typical response is, yes, as if, you know, that's what's expected, and it really is. So what we're looking to do is have the students get prepared from the beginning. So what you really need to start out by doing is a calendar. You can make a calendar for your semester. You might want to start by looking at the beginning and ending dates of the semester for the classes and then obviously for your exam times. On the calendar, also note whatever available days there are for other work, such as for weekends and for holidays. And by other work, I mean work outside of classes, studying, redoing outlines, things like that. Also, you want to put on your calendar identifications of the days and times that your classes meet. If your classes are Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, then put in all of your classes for those days. It shows an open day on Wednesday, but that's open for other type of work. Also, what you want to do then is identify non-class time so that you can start doing such things as reading your class assignments. I know, God forbid we should do that, but yes, that absolutely is something that is required. You cannot walk into law school classes and learn just from the class.
Let me interrupt here if I may. I remember from undergrad there was a rough rule of thumb that I was told that for every hour I spend in class, I should spend 2 hours outside of class doing homework, doing assignments, things that I might be turning in. Is there an analogous rule for law school?
Ron, what do you think about that?
I don't think there's rule. I think what you need to do is change your expectations from undergraduate. Undergraduate, you expect to go to class and learn about something and then go home and study it more after the class. For law school, you need to prepare the material before the class so that you are prepared to learn the most possible in that class. And what you should expect that first semester is to put as much time in as you possibly can. So it's not a question of what's the minimum, but how much work can you possibly put in to maximize your level of success. That way, you've maximized your success your first semester, and if you've been putting in too much time or certain things aren't productive, then you're in a position of success to cut back the next semester, rather than, oh, I put in the minimum time, and it wasn't quite enough, and so next semester I've got to put in more time. That's digging yourself out of a hole, and no student wants to be in that position.
And also, what I do is I usually relate to it this way. It's a question, and it's the attorney's question. What does it take to get the job done effectively? That's the real question that every attorney has to answer for every one of his or her tasks. And that's the question that law students have to start addressing also. What does it take to get this job done well? We, you know, the mantra from middle-class America is work hard. The reality for attorneys is work smart and work effectively. Now, that may take an awful lot of time to do certain things, but that's what you need to do. On the other hand, if you work effectively, you might end up being a lot more efficient and get things done in a more compressed time frame and still be where you need to be. And that's the balancing that we need to address.
So how does work smart translate into things I can actually do to prepare for my class?
Well, one is make sure you have your time set up. The other is understand what briefing is all about. We're going to talk about that in just a second, but you know, a lot of people talk about briefing cases and what they're supposed to do. Well, in essence, you end up reading a case three times. You go through it the first time just to get a sense of what the case is all about. Then you come back and you actually try to put what I call the Reader's Digest version, the brief, together so that you're using only the essential materials. And then the third time you read it is before you go into class to refresh your memory. That then heightens your ability to come into class and perform, and when you're at that level, you're also learning more from the class.
I'd like to add one thing, and I agree with Joe about reading three times. What I emphasize is to work smart, the first time you read the case, don't mark anything in the book. Don't underline, don't highlight, don't write anything in the margins.
I agree.
Read through to get the overview, to find out how it turns out, to get an idea of what the case is about. The second time you go through, now that you know what the case is about, now you have an idea of what's important, now you're ready to underline, make notes in the margin about the points that you want to put into your brief, so that you have prepared yourself to write the brief. For a student who tries to both underline the first time through and brief, that's not working smart. It's going to waste a lot of time and create a lot of confusion and result in more time spent writing a bad brief. If you work smart, you'll do the quick run-through of the case to get the overview, understand it, then the detailed reading the second time, then you write your brief. I like to suggest a third read at that point so that you read through looking at your brief to make sure your brief is accurate and correcting it. But like Joe said, rereading the case and the brief right before class will make that class the most effective possible, and that's smart, because then you get the most value at that time. Trying to catch up, trying to read the case or learn afterwards is the slow way and the wasteful way.
And I think the students also have to realize that there's something more than just a set of cases to read. These cases are fairly difficult to understand, and therefore they have to be reading outside materials, text materials. And when you set up your time management skills and your schedule, you have to be making time to do those things also, and having them available. And maybe even making an informal outline of that material would help also. When you go in and read your cases after that, you know what they fit into and what they're trying to do. And also, one thing that we also have to make allowance for is to review those briefs and outlines as a preparation for class, and then also, once class is over and we've taken our notes, review those and incorporate them into the larger picture, such as a class outline that we'll talk about a little bit later. There are two sources of some good information, by the way, for time management and other study skills. They're on the webpage. Joe Landsberger, L-A-N-D-S-B-E-R-G-E-R, out of Minnesota, started this, I believe, for St. Thomas University up there, and now has his own webpage at www.studygs.net/schedule/. And that takes you right into a time management webpage. Likewise, Cornell University has something similar at www.clt.cornell.edu/campus/learn/ssworkshops/skresources.html. There are very good resources for this. There are only two of the ones that are available out there. But that can give you a really good basis for that. So we were talking about reading and briefing these assigned cases. So when you're briefing them, the question becomes, what do you do? What do you look for? Why are you doing this kind of thing? Well, one thing we have to understand is why we do the briefing. Good attorneys, and we're talking about good attorneys here, actually research the law. In spite of what your uncle tells you, in spite of what your good buddy practicing downtown tells you, good attorneys actually research the law. We cannot memorize all of it, and therefore we have to research. Much of that law is based on cases. The reality is most of those cases are exceptionally long and involve issues that are above and beyond the issues for which we're doing the research. So what we really need to do then is to use those cases efficiently. This is what we're talking about, working smartly as opposed to working just hard, or hardly working. No, I don't mean that. But in any event, to use the cases efficiently, in other words, to use them only for the purposes for which we are doing our research. Well, to do that, what attorneys need to be able to do then is identify only the questions or problems that are relevant to the research, and then pick up just the law that relates to those points, and then look at the facts in the case that relate just to that law, that show whether the law has or has not been met in a particular situation. And then we have to be able to determine what conclusion the court reached on those questions for which we did our research. Looking at that conclusion, then we have to decide whether the court's conclusion was logical under the existing law, or possibly what the court might have done is distinguish the facts of this case from those to which the law typically would apply, and perhaps maybe the court would develop an exception or some alternative way of dealing with this. But these are things that we're looking for in the briefing. Ron?
Also in your briefing, it's preparing you for class. It's preparing you both by making you read the case thoroughly and think it through, and by giving you notes to work from in class. And so when you are evaluating whether you're doing a good job briefing, think about whether that brief helped you in a particular class. It might be that one professor emphasizes certain aspects, for example, procedure. Well, then your brief in that class ought to include those aspects so you're prepared for the professor's question. The question about the quality of your briefing should always be evaluated from the point of view of, is it really preparing me for the class? And if not, modify the brief for that class so it does do that job and you're ready for whatever questions might come up.
Another skill that you have to pay attention to is actually being physically present at, in this case, a class, but ultimately for attorneys, whether it is at closings, negotiation sessions, trials, motion hearings, those kinds of things. From the learning standpoint at law school, we know that effective learning really takes place through using various techniques and through repetition. It's not just a one-shot effort. The repetition can come from reading, talking, listening, evaluating, thinking about things, writing it down. This is what you need to do. But whatever it is, when you get there for class or for that session, you must be there ahead of time. Why? Because if meeting is at 9 o'clock and you show up at 9 and you're still trying to dig things out of your briefcase and get your laptop started up and get your trio started up,
Or your brain started up,
you're not listening. You're not effective. As a matter of fact, you're sending signals that you're just not in tune with what's going on here. BlackBerry or no BlackBerry, your life isn't saved at this point because you're not ready to go. So getting there ahead of time and actually having everything open and ready to go makes you ready to learn. And that preparation, as we've talked about before, is reading assignments, briefing the cases, reading outside materials, reviewing those before coming to class, and then in class, actually take notes. Taking notes accurately is a major skill for all practicing attorneys, and we have to especially hone that in law school. It does not mean writing down everything that's said in class. It does not mean being a transcriber on your laptop of all things that are said and then thinking that you are going to go back and look it over later on. No, you should be thinking. You should be throwing out irrelevant things. You should be asking pertinent questions if something is not clear. And it, whatever it is, respond to the question, even if it's in your head, because you are actively engaged and you're evaluating at that point. And one of the best ways to do that is sit up front. That's called the zone. Be in the zone. Why? Because you're under pressure. And lawyers are always under pressure, and that's where you need to be. Volunteer for answers. Why? Because it gets you engaged. First, volunteer for the answers where you think you know them. But don't be surprised if you're then asked questions that you don't know the answer to. Think through the question. Don't just rely on those briefs. Often those questions are not answered by the brief. We're looking for some logical thinking. Ron?
You have to focus on your goal. Your goal in coming to law school was not primarily to get comfortable. Your goal was to learn. And learning is frequently the product of being uncomfortable, putting yourself under pressure. So I agree completely that the closer you can get to the front, the more you're going to get out of it usually. Also, the more you force yourself to participate, the more you're going to get out of the class. Similarly, what you'll discover is the more you do those things, the more you get comfortable there. And that will make future classes easier to participate in and get more out of. And also better prepare you for practice, because when you get to court, you can bet you're going to be called on. And that's actually our goal, isn't it?
Or if you're in a negotiation session for a real estate deal or some contract that you're putting together, you have to be able to respond. You have to speak out loud. You have to have those that artful ability to put words together that make sense to other people. And this is the time to learn to do it. You're not being graded in class. You're developing skills while you're in there. And one of the other ways you can hone your skills is to revise those notes that you've taken as soon as you leave class or as soon after class as you possibly can. Look over those notes and briefs. Make some notes to clarify things. This is what attorneys do. You leave the session you were in, you look over the materials, you look over the notes, and you rewrite them a bit clearly. Not perfectly, but just so any ambiguities are covered, or if there were questions that you find weren't answered, you know what to ask. You pick up the phone, or you write an email, or you do something that brings this to a closure. And also, it makes you logically organize that information that you've put in there. So I think that that's a very important skill. You just don't walk away from it and think, oh, God, that's terrific. I did not get called on today.
Quite the contrary. You want to make sure that you are engaged in presenting the material, whether it's to yourself in your notes or to other students in a study group or exchanging emails. That can be a very effective form of forcing yourself to really think through the material. And that's going to help you learn more.
And as another part of the reinforcement concept in developing your skills further is this idea of at some time when it's logical to do so, start putting together an outline for your class. My recommendation to the students is as soon as you have finished a particular topic, if you start with torts in the fall, one of the first things you tend to cover in torts are intentional torts. The first thing they cover logically out of that typically might be intent and what it constitutes. You finish intent, that's a very good time to start outlining intent. You go back to your old notes, you look at your briefs, and you put them together in some logical fashion. What you're expected to do is look at how the various legal concepts relate to one another. This is the time to put them down in writing. You manage detailed, complex information efficiently by doing this. You organize large volumes of information effectively. That's what lawyers are supposed to do, and logically, by the way. The idea is to look at broader legal principles and then look at their elements or their subsets so that you know what they relate to and you know when to call that information into current use for yourself. What you also want to put into that outline are useful factual scenarios relating to those legal principles. Those factual scenarios can come from any numbers of sources, exam questions that you've seen or facts of cases that you have or from your outside reading some other factual scenarios from a horn book or whatever that show what has been done with respect to whatever topic you're outlining so you can see how that law was applied at that point and what results came from that application.
And a good start on outlining is the table of contents in the book that you're using. There's your outline. And if the professor does things in a different order than the book, simply change that order in your outline so it matches what the professor is doing, and you'll discover how to put things in perspective. You don't have to start from scratch. There's a lot of help in that way. But the table of contents can be a big and an easy tool to use to get things in proper order.
And in sync with that, you can also use the syllabus that your professor has put together. He or she has looked at that table of contents. He or she has decided how they would like to approach it in the class. And so this gives you a look at how the professor is also looking at that. There is a presentation of some of the logical connections. Also, for those of you who are visual, another tool and another skill is to prepare flowcharts for your class. These are good visual representations of all the possible permutations of the different issues that might arise in the course and the legal principles that you need to deal with. And this helps you develop memory aids with logical organization that lead to accurate analysis. And so feel free to use that.
And a flowchart is also a good tactile way of learning. Looking at the flowchart is visual. Doing it, drawing it, or redrawing it is a good tactile way to get things into your long-term memory and into your understanding.
And one of the other skills that you need to recognize is absolutely fundamentally necessary to the practice of law, and obviously has to begin in law school, is you must go beyond, well beyond, mere memorization. You have to develop the ability to understand the law. That means that you have to see the interrelatedness of all the different concepts in that course and how they tie in together with one another. That understanding of the law helps you internalize what this is all about. It helps you figure out how these things work in a logical analysis. So that's where you want to be by the time you are finished reviewing this and putting it into your outline, and then ultimately by the end of the semester, because you can get a fairly good idea of how you might have to answer certain questions as they come up on exams, and more importantly, how you have to address these issues when you're practicing law.
Remember to look at each case as an example of how a judge solved problems. These are good examples of what you're going to have to do when exam time comes. So focus on the case not just as an example of the law that you're trying to learn, but as an example of the skill you're trying to learn, of applying the law to a particular set of facts to reach conclusions.
And as a final point, all this comes to a culminating activity for you as a student sometime during the semester or at the end of the semester. You're going to have to take an exam. You may have to take more than one. You should be practicing, analyzing, and answering those questions from as early on as it's reasonable to do so in that course. Attorneys need to solve problems logically and efficiently. You don't learn it instantly. It's a creaming to the surface process. You need to be able to develop that skill. When you're looking at these problems, you have to identify what the essential element is or what the essential problem is. Then you need to know the law that relates to that. And you look only to that law for that issue, and you look only to the facts that relate to that law. And then you're called upon to draw a logical conclusion. The conclusion is important, but it's important only to the extent that it's logical. It doesn't have to agree with a professor. It doesn't have to agree with the outcome of a particular case. It's extremely important to go and practice and practice and practice. One, it's practice, and practice helps. Two, it's repetition, which helps you memorize.
And it's a good time to reiterate that exams will come faster than you think. When you begin law school, it seems like the first set of exams is years away, but they will come very quickly. And unlike undergraduate school, where you can put things off and then catch up, that's not possible in law school. So the most important thing is stay on schedule. Don't postpone things like practicing and briefing and outlining until sometime in the future, because that sometime in the future will suddenly be upon you, and there won't be time to do everything all at once. It's important to start working as hard as you can at the beginning and keep that up through the whole semester so that when exams approach, you're ready. And then after you succeed in these exams, you can look back and decide which things were more effective for you, which things weren't, and you can discard those next semester, but hopefully from a point of success.
Just as a final point for you, if you would like to look at some materials, and there's a wealth of material out there on studying in law school, there's one book that brings to mind the question that the exams are upon you more quickly than you think. It's entitled 1,000 Days to the Bar. It's written by Dennis Tonsing and is published by Hine and Company out of Buffalo, New York, with a 2003 publication date on it. He goes through in depth relating the different attorney skills to what you're doing in law school and why you're doing that. So you may want to take a look at either that book or any number of the others that are out there. But we wish you all good luck, and prepare well and work smartly.
Thank you very much, Professor Groman and Brown.
You are listening to Cali Radio. This has been a presentation from the Center for Computer-Assisted Legal Instruction. Please visit our website at www.cali.org to download additional podcasts from Cali Radio.